You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Soulmate. Today, our show is called, well, actually, it's 90 Day Soulmate. The show's always called that, but it's based upon a fascinating research article on emotionally focused couple therapy. And this was done in a large mental health agency where they interviewed 22 therapists about emotionally focused couples therapy, and tried to get some feedback on what worked and what didn't work. So today's show is inspired by this research. Before we glaze our eyes over with this research and the details and what went on there from this academic paper, we're going to go through this in a much more 90 Day Soulmate version, which how this research touches us and can help us recognize things that can help couples based upon a greater overall sense of all the different things we talk about on 90 Day Soulmate. So why do some couples grow closer in difficulty while others drift apart? That's one of the questions we're going to look at. To understand this study, we first need to understand something called emotionally focused couple therapy. What is it? It's EFT, emotionally focused couple therapy, or emotionally focused therapy. It is one of the most researched and effective forms of couples counseling in the world. If you haven't heard about it, it was developed by Sue Johnson primarily. This EFT is based on a simple but powerful idea, which is most relationship problems are not really communication problems. They are connection problems. So a lot of the things we're going to talk about today are going to be based upon connection and trying to figure out ways to do it. So we're not going to focus so much on the emotionally focused therapy, but we're going to look at all these different topics around it. When couples argue about intimacy, about money, about parenting, about chores, on time, the real issue is often hidden beneath the surface. And we're going to say it's based upon connection and not communication. So underlying most of these issues is a deeper question, which is, do I matter to you? Do I still matter to you? Do you matter to me? I mean, these are the things that we sometimes get so involved and so used to our relationship that we may not have that same intensity of intention and attention to the relationship. So that's something. The intensity of intention and attention. So not tension, but attention. So paying attention to the other person and having an actual intention in the communication that we have in the connection with the other person. Will you be there when I need you? Can I trust you? Do I matter to you? These are things that we need to continuously, on an ongoing basis, make sure that our partner knows and that we know from our partner. EFT helps couples identify these emotional patterns that keep them stuck. It helps them understand the fears that are going through and under these patterns that are keeping them apart and not connecting like they should. And this can create then a stronger emotional bond as a result of identifying these challenges and issues and addressing them. So now here is where this research becomes interesting. It's not that the studying couples, in fact, we just spoke about this a little bit, this research was studying the therapists who worked with the couples, and it talked about the therapists who accepted this emotionally focused couples therapy and brought it into their practice. And these were the therapists who weren't sure they knew everything about therapy, that they were uncertain, and they then wanted to learn more. They then read on this, they got training in, and they accepted it. there were some who were too scared, too uncertain of their own abilities to take part in it. And then there were others who thought they knew everything about therapy and were not interested. So it's almost a reflection of how we are in our relationships. Some people know they don't know everything about their relationships. They're willing to study more. They're willing to go to classes. They're willing to go with their partner and learn together, read books, take courses, travel, you know, do things, do active, you know, when I say active therapy, it's mean when you do things together, when you spend time together, you have connection. And the whole idea of today's show is talking about building that connection. And that connection is the number one thing that couples therapy focuses on. And if we can figure out ways to do that without sitting there in a room with a therapist, that is a way not to need therapy, but or be an additional tool in our shed. The researchers wanted to know from these therapists, what helps therapists embrace emotionally focused therapy and what got in the way? So it was the barriers and the facilitators of this couples-based therapy that was based upon emotionally focused therapy. So they discovered was the therapists who valued relationships believed emotional connection matters. And they were open to learning these new skills, very much likely similar to how we are when we believe that connection matters, when relationships matter, then we're much more open to embracing self-help, reading books, attending classes, learning more with our partner. So we realized something bigger from this research, that emotionally focused therapy sits at the intersection of almost every topic that we've discussed on the show in the past. To name a few of the topics we've discussed in the past, attachment theory, the triune brain, Freud's id, ego, and superego. We've discussed Paul Ekman and his work on emotions and facial recognition or display of emotions. John Gottman's research on successful marriages, love languages, neuroplasticity, evolutionary psychology, which is one of my favorite, and even topics like sleep, nutrition, exercise, and stress management all play a part in connection. So each of these areas are describing a different piece of the puzzle, but it all is part of human connection. Why does rejection hurt so much? And why do intelligent people sometimes say and do hurtful things? Why do couples get trapped in the same arguments over and over? And perhaps most importantly, how do we move from a survival mode to a connection mode in our relationship? We don't want to be dealing from survival because then we're based in a tense, anxiety-based way of relating rather than connection mode where we're in a loving, open, emotionally partnership with our spouse, partner, girlfriend, boyfriend. Because at the heart of every great relationship, it's not perfection. It is emotional safety. So when you feel safe enough to have a soft argument, when you feel safe enough to discuss the challenge you're having with your partner in your life and feeling like they are really listening, where they have empathy, where you have empathy, understanding, that's where you have connection. And where all this exists, emotional safety is where love grows. So that's what we're going to discuss today when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and create a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. What fascinated me most about this research is that the therapists who are most willing to learn EFT, emotionally focused therapy, were the therapists who admitted they didn't know everything. And we talked about that a little bit before. When you admit you don't know everything, it means you're willing to learn something new. And if you think about it, that's true in relationships too, that couples who usually grow are the ones that who don't think they have all the answers. It's those that think that maybe we need more answers. They're the ones who stay curious, they stay teachable, of course, and continue learning about each other. So let's start with our first section here. Why do smart couples still struggle? Most couples think they're fighting about money, chores, parenting, intimacy. How about time? How much time they spend together? But the research often suggests much more, a deeper issue, something sort of like, do I matter to you? I think those issues go away. If you really matter and they matter to you, and you focus on how much you matter to each other, those other issues, money, chores, parenting, intimacy, and time, start to be sorted out. Trigger words, perception, meaning, assumptions, interpretation, emotional safety. We have perceptions of what we think is going on, but perception is what we see. It might not necessarily be what is actually going on. So we got to focus on understanding perception. We talk about this in other things that I did a paper called The Psychology of Design, and it had to do with the layout of facilities and how glass and light and different colors and different objects were used in facilities to help move people to sort of to have some kind of response. So to have, first of all, have a perception of the environment that was just made up because it was visually made up, but it really wasn't the environment. It was like when you go to a medical facility, you're expecting certain things. You're expecting chairs to be in a waiting room, and you're expecting walls to be white and brighter lights, and you're expecting certain things to look certain ways. And when you have these perceptions, you feel like, oh, this is a medical facility. But really, it's just a room where they do this stuff in, and because it's set up in this way, we like to have things that we are used to. Meaning, we've been to one medical facility, and we go to the next, and the next, and the next. We want to have a certain similarity. For instance, if you went into a medical facility and it looked like the waiting room to a tire repair shop, you know, a coffee maker on the side, posters of tools with hot cars and, you know, the latest in bikini wear, you would kind of be like, this isn't a doctor's office, right? So we have certain perceptions that are based upon our own past experience. And when we see something, we think that's real, but really it's just to give us it's false, but it's true. And what I mean by that is that when we see something that we know from the past to be and fit a pattern of something we've seen in the past, we are comfortable assuming that it's the same thing. A movie theater looks like a movie theater. A doctor's office looks like a doctor's office. A tire repair place looks like a tire repair place. That they don't mix themselves up so they look like something else. And because of that, we talk about perceptions in a relationship. We see something and we hear something and we base it upon our past patterns of perception of that same thing instead of what is the underlying thing that's actually happening. If I just see a behavior and because I have a pattern from a past relationship that I associate with that behavior, I may think something's going on with my partner, especially since I may not be talking with them at a connected level like I used to be. So we have to see and understand that we sometimes react more to what we think happened than what actually happened. We weave a story around evidence rather than first getting to the bottom of the evidence and then understanding what happened before we create a story in our mind. A lot of times our perception creates the reality, and then we start seeing the evidence of that false reality because we're only looking for it. So sometimes we're on the right track when we assume, and sometimes we're putting ourselves down the wrong track, and we can invent things to create problems in a relationship. Paul Ekman, we talked about him in the past. He is the founding father of facial emotions, and maybe he's not, but he talked about going to different areas around the world. He did research on facial expressions, and that there were 6 or 7, depending on who you talk to and what time of his career you talk to him. 6 or 7 expressions that were, what is it called? Universal expressions, facial expressions of emotion. And they were fear, anger, sadness, happiness, disgust, and surprise. So the 7, or should I say the 6 that he came up with were fear, anger, sadness, happiness, disgust, surprise. That cultures had nothing to do with the differences in facial expression. If someone was angry, they had a certain expression. If they were happy and they smiled, that was the same facial expression, no matter where he did this research. And I'm going to say, generally speaking, for the most part, not 100%, but overall, there was a universal understanding of facial expression. Why do we bring that up right now? Is that sometimes we hear something and we're not paying attention to micro expressions. We're not paying attention to the other person's expressions, but we are putting our own, we're projecting our own feelings on the face of somebody else, and we see them as being angry when they're really not angry. If we are upset about something, we may see somebody and we may think they're upset because we're upset, but they may not actually feel that way. So what Paul Ekman's research did was show us that if you are able to read well the facial expressions of other people, you may actually see reality rather than perception of reality. In couple work, when working with couples, is when you start to see your partner's facial expressions and understand them and connect really well with them, instead of basing your feelings of how they feel based upon your feelings, you base your feelings of how they feel on their actual feelings and how they communicate with you, rather than your pre-biases in that communication. Let's go on to part 2, the hidden emotional need that couples have. So attachment theory teaches that every human being has a need for emotional connection. This need does not disappear when we become adults. For instance, there's such things as attachment and bonding and connection, security and belonging, and we want to have this as part of our relationship, not only with our partner, but with other humans. We want to have attachment. We want to have some kind of bond, connection, security, and belonging. And what we find is that when we lose that, that can lead us to despair. If we don't feel that we have connection with our partner, that can cause us anxiety and despair. If we don't feel like we belong in our community, if we feel that we've been kicked out of our club, if we feel that there's something going on in the neighborhood and people don't like us, that doesn't make us feel secure. And we have a need for this, an emotional need for attachment, a belonging to those around us. And this is a deep-seated thing that we need based upon evolution, that if you were kicked out of the tribe, it meant you were probably going to go out in the wilderness on your own and die because you didn't have the support of those around you. You didn't have the protection, the shelter, the fire, the group that were there to defend each other, you know, defend, help everybody from outside attackers. People survive through family, through tribes, through community, through being connected. And rejection from these families, from these tribes, from these communities often meant, again, that you lose protection and something very dangerous could happen. Our brains still have these ancient survival connection needs deeply embedded in them. So if your spouse doesn't return your text, the conscience can say you didn't text back, but the unconscious fear is, am I important to you? Am I losing you? Are you not paying attention to me? Am I being ignored? And there's a deep-seated needing for this connection. So if you remember love languages, a number of years ago, this guy, Gary Chapman, came out with this book called The First, it was called The Five Love Languages. These were the five: words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, physical touch, and gifts. So if you think about this, you think about, okay, words, hearing, talk, you know, saying to your partner, I love you, I want to spend time with you. It's words, and this is, some people want to hear that. They want to hear the words in the language. Quality time is actually just spending time, putting in the time, whether it's cooking with your spouse, whether it's going on vacation with your partner, whether it's playing a game, just spending time, watching a TV show, doing nothing, right? Sometimes time is really the essence of what that person needs for you to feel close, or for them to feel close with you. Acts of service. So I'm going to pick you up at 3 o'clock. I'm going to bring you to this place, that I am doing things for you. So it's helping the person, acts of service. Then the fourth was physical touch. Some people want to be touched and held and caressed and given a physical intimacy to feel like they're being loved. And lastly, gifts. Who doesn't like gifts? Well, I guess some people like these other languages more than gifts, but some people feel appreciation by getting gifts. And these five love languages are, you know, you're said, oh, what's your love language? Well, you know what? If you splatter these five in your relationship, words, quality time, acts of service, physical touch, and gifts, and make sure you've got a couple of those every once in a while in that relationship, you're going to hit that person's love language. Even if they don't know what theirs is, it's going to be in there somewhere. I've never really thought about my love language. I've never really in-depthly said, well, what is it? Is it quality time? Is it touch? Is it words of affirmation, acts of service? You know what? I like all of them. I can't tell you which one I like best, but all of them would be nice. Lay them on me. Come on, do it. So the love languages may not be a separate psychological system. They actually may all be attached and connected in some way. They may just look at a different way people seek attachment security, wanting to know that they're attached firmly and securely to those around them and those they love. They want to know that they matter. We'll be right back after this message.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Something that we have to know when we're trying to seek connection and seek a relationship, we have to know in this relationship where what part of our brain is really driving this issue or challenge. We talk about the triune brain. There's a theory called the triune brain. It's basically splitting the brain into different aspects of it. The core reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, the neomammalian, the reptilian. I'll get back into that in a minute. But here, let's go into this. That the triune brain splits the brain into three pieces so we can understand kind of how our brain works. It doesn't mean the brain is actually these three pieces, but these are representations that help us understand a little bit more about the different ways we think about stuff. The triune brain, threat, how we react to threat, survival, regulation, how we regulate our emotions, how we regulate our actions. And then are we being emotionally flooded by something which causes us to not be able to think as clearly as we can when we're not emotionally flooded? So let's look at the triune brain. We look at the reptilian brain. That's the deep instincts, the desires, the things that we really aren't thinking about, but they impact us daily because we just get these feelings about something. And this is where, you know, lust, hunger, wanting to survive come from. The limbic brain is more of the emotional brain. It's the part where we, you know, chemicals are dumped into our brain and from feeling loved or feeling anger, when we have that emotion that comes from, say, the reptilian brain, it then can affect us emotionally in our limbic brain, which then can cut off our human brain or the logic system or the neocortex, which is, quote, the thinking brain, the brain that we really deal with things on a logical level. The more emotion that's in our life, the less logical we start thinking about the situations we're involved in. Many couples try to solve emotional problems with logic, but if they're in the emotion of the moment, sometimes they can't. They can't have that discussion. So we need to deal with the emotion first, come down from it, and then we can talk more logically and lovingly about the solution. And then the limbic brain, people think, you know, that emotional is what stops them. It's like, if I don't feel like I matter and that's creating an emotion, then I really have a hard time communicating with my partner. And then finally, most arguments begin before the thinking can catch up, because we're not thinking about the argument, we're actually feeling about the argument. The inner battle then exists between all these aspects of us. We're very complex human beings, right? And most of the time, the biggest conflict isn't between the partners. It's internal within us and internal within them. And then because of that conflict, the communication has a very difficult time coming through. We talk about in Freud, actually says, we talked about Freud in past shows, the id, the ego, the superego, you know, our inner child, emotional regulation. Let's talk about the id. You know, the id is very similar to the reptilian brain. It's survival. It's emotional. It's I want something now. You look at the superego and it's a regulatory part of our body. It's actually what regulates. This is Freud's theory, of course. And again, we talk about this in psychology from the aspect, these are theoretical models that give us an understanding of how the brain could work, but this isn't like, you don't have an id in your brain, you don't have a superego in your brain, but this is just a certain aspect of your brain and how it acts in certain situations. So going back to the superego, these are like the rules and regulations that we have burned into us from how we were born, how we were raised. These are the patterns and programs that culture and society has taught us that limit our ability to do something that's outside of it because it makes us feel uncomfortable. So the superego kind of controls us to do the right thing. And then finally we have the ego, which is the logical piece of the brain, which has to balance the id and the superego and the drives and the current motivations, as well as following rules based upon what's going on in our life. So if something's happening right now, it's the thinking brain, the ego's going, okay, what do I do? And it has to make that decision. So who was Freud? He was the guy who, had a cigar, and somebody said sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. There's a lot of history about him. We did a whole show about him. The id, again, wants immediate gratification, wants comfort. The superego acts as an internal critic, looks at rules, looks at you following rules, criticizes bad actions, kind of pushes you towards good actions. And the ego, again, attempts to balance both in the way we deal with the outside world. Many adult relationships and their reactions to things that happen were learned in childhood. How to please people, how to avoid. So like, if I have a problem, do I try to please that person in order to bring down the problem? Do I avoid the person because I don't want to have an issue with them? Do I want to control the situation, or do I try to rescue somebody who's having a problem? These are all things we learn as children. Let's look at an example. One of the people in a couple says, "Are you upset?" And somebody's response is immediately, "No." "Are you upset?" "No." The id, the person who asks the question, says, "I feel hurt," right? Because something else is going on here. And I'm going to go backwards here, is that both people can have these feelings going on. So the id is the underlying survival, instinctual, what it wants right now, piece of us. The superego is saying, "Don't be needy." It's trying to get us to conform to cultural, family, societal norms. It wants us, if we're in a relationship, it wants us to conform to a relationship norm. Whereas again, the id wants what's best for me right now. The superego is saying, "How do I conform to this relationship?" The ego suppresses the feelings of the id, and it tries to deal with, like we logically try to deal with the situation, we may just start to repress those feelings. And as we repress them, we don't share them, we stop being honest in the relationship because we feel we can't. What helps us grow in a relationship? Something that was learned from the study was the learner's mindset. The learner's mindset is when growth can begin because we are teachable. We need to be teachable to grow. And this is the learner's mindset, that our brains are, neuroplasticity is part of our brain where it can grow and change and learn and become better and stronger in the areas that we want it to, or it can become worse in the areas that we focus on if they're bad areas. We can rewire our brain, right? So by focusing on certain actions and behaviors, we can become rewired so it becomes more of an automatic thing for us to do the behaviors we want, to think the thoughts we want. New experiences will create new pathways. The more we have those new experiences, say we go to a therapy and with our partner and we experience a good outcome and we go again and again and again, we start learning a whole new way of communicating. We may learn new behaviors. And as those grow now, automatically we may start taking those actions and behaviors that are good for us. Communication can improve. Trust can be rebuilt. That is a good thing. That's something that we can do because of neuroplasticity. A good way to set a foundation of growth in a relationship is to set common goals. We talk about this a lot. Have a common goal with your partner. Work on it together. spend time planning, doing, and dreaming about this common goal. As you do, you're spending quality time together. You're communicating on a deeper level. You have a forward future focus. A future focused makes you have a connection. It feels like there's attachment because you're thinking of you're moving forward in life with this person. These things all benefit us in a relationship. So instead of saying, let's stop arguing, why don't we just say, hey, let's spend 15 minutes every day talking without phones. Let's spend 30 minutes a week working on that goal we have for our vacation next year. Specific goals can create measurable change. That's a positive in our life. So why do people stay stuck with all these abilities to make changes, go to therapy, read books, and do things differently? Why do they stay stuck? Well, there's fear. There's people who procrastinate because they're like, you know, I'll look at this tomorrow. But there's also something, which is the comfort zone. It's the comfort of not doing anything. If I have to take action, that takes effort. And so I'm in this comfort zone of doing nothing. I'd rather do nothing and not have a good relationship than have to work at the relationship and have a good relationship. It's one of the reasons people don't do anything. They stay stuck. It's habit also. They don't have the habit of doing something. In order to change your mind, change your behaviors, you have to break old habits, create new habits. Many couples postpone difficult conversations. You know, I'll wait till I get home. I'll wait till the weekend. I can't bring this up now. I don't want the stress. So instead of having the stress now, it's postponed. It's postponed until it's inevitable. It's postponed until it can't be avoided. And then at that point, it's really stressful. But at least you avoided it for now. Fear creates delay. I don't know how they're going to react, so I'm not going to say anything. And the longer you put it off, the more that gap grows between being honest and open and keeping things hidden because you don't want the stress of now because you fear how your partner is going to react. Also, the distance. Distance causes disconnection. If I can't talk about this, maybe I'm avoiding them and I'm not talking about other things, and now I'm becoming even more disconnected. People resist change, just like organizations resist change. Couples resist change, and these same principles apply everywhere. Couples can say, we've been meaning to work on our marriage. 5 years later, nothing's changed, and knowledge without action changes nothing. So if you read stuff, if you learn stuff, if you go to therapy on your own and your partner's doing nothing, you may learn a lot of things, but maybe there's no action happening. So taking action is sometimes the most difficult part. And when we come back, we'll finish up this show, 90 Day Soulmate.
Research indicates that successful long-term relationships are built on mutual respect and shared values. So one of the reasons to find the soulmate, like we just talked about, is that it helps when we talk about individual growth and couple growth, but individual physical and mental health is a result of being with somebody that you're deeply connected with.
And you grew up in couple versus alone more fast, okay? I know say the people alone cannot grow up, of course, but in couple, I guess the way this has somebody different view of you, just not yourself, create more data to improve yourself.
So somebody that you respect and admire, you will actually receive, I'll call it criticism, assessment, and perhaps correction and continuous improvement.
Oh, you're talking like me.
From that person. In comparison to somebody that you might not respect, then you might not accept that. Yeah. And that would be, so soulmates are somebody that help you. And they're very empathetic and they have empathy. They show empathy, especially when you have a flaw. Maybe they talk to you about, hey, is this something that you want to work on or not? If you do, they'll help you. And if you don't, they'll maybe just say, okay, we'll just move on.
Yeah, you know? I call you later.
Or maybe they're not your soulmate and
exactly.
They move on, right?
tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Hey, thanks for watching 90 Day Soulmate. Today we're talking about basically couples therapy, but we're talking about emotionally focused couples therapy. What actually creates change in a relationship, in a connection? Change requires repetition. That if you're looking to do anything, if you're looking to change your body, you're going to go to the gym, you're going to do it on an ongoing basis. You're going to, what do they say, rinse and repeat. You're going to exercise, you're going to do a set routine, you're going to go back every other day, every couple of days, and you got to do it over and over and over. And after a while, your body responds, it grows, it changes. Cells change, structure of your body changes, the way you eat influences that. And if you start changing how you're eating, your body's going to respond as well. So triggers to this are deliberate practice. You need to be deliberate in the areas that you want to change. You need to create habits. Habits are created by doing something on an ongoing basis, setting a schedule for yourself and just making it regular. Repetition. The repetition is the way to learn something, the way to do something, the way to change something is through repetition. Feedback. How am I doing? Hey, guess what? I went up. Like for me, in weightlifting, it's did I go up another plate on a machine? Did I get another rep this time out? If I am constantly improving a little bit, maybe I'm running on a treadmill and run 0.1 mile per hour faster. Hey, that's progress. So feedback lets us know where we are. And then improvement. Maybe my course of exercise, I'm focusing on exercise for the moment, but maybe I'm not seeing any improvement, which means I need to change what I'm doing. Is it changing my exercise, changing my food, changing my sleep, changing my stress? Who knows? Changing the gym I go to. It could be any of these things. But if we are having a setback, or we're not having improvement in something we're working on, whether it's gym-related or whether it's relationship-related, it means we need to potentially change how we're working on it. Nobody gets fit by just reading books. So again, knowledge without action does not change behavior, does not change a relationship, does not change ourselves in exercise. Nobody becomes a better partner by just reading relationship books. We need to relate to somebody, and we need to have some kind of open dialogue and some feedback and see where we're going. Practice creates improvement. So practice, repetition. Sleep, whether it is a relationship or whether it's exercise, whether it's work-related, whether it's anxiety, depression, sleep, poor sleep, contributes to it. That emotional regulation is difficult to have when you're not getting enough sleep. Empathy, it's hard to be empathic. It's hard to have empathy for others if you haven't had enough sleep. And your patience is very thin when you haven't had enough sleep. Having enough sleep, eating well, being fed, not talking with somebody when you're really hungry and you haven't slept is probably a good thing to do. Many relationship problems are increased when people are exhausted, and I'm going to throw this in here too, when they're hungry. Blood sugar fluctuations can impact mood, irritability, impulse control. Sometimes a relationship problem is only a biological problem, meaning it's something going on with your biology. We talk about our biome, we talk about our bacteria in our gut. If they're not getting fed the right way and we're not producing the right chemicals from our bacteria, which feed our body, then we're going to not be in the best shape to have a good relationship with others. So feeding ourselves well, eating well, getting enough sleep, getting enough exercise, getting the proper nutrition helps our biology, which helps our relationship. An exhausted couple argues at midnight. Not a good thing. The same discussion at 10 a.m. the next day may lead to a different conclusion. Finally, are you there for me? Every major relationship theory eventually arrives at the same destination. Do you, do they, trust each other? Are you vulnerable with each other? Is there intimacy? Is there empathy? Is there responsiveness? Are you present for them? Are they present for you? Focused in. We talked about this early in the show. Attention and intention. Are we being intentional in our communication and connection? And are we paying attention? And with that, we had all these other qualities we threw in there. Again, trust, vulnerability, empathy, being responsive, presence, that being there for them and for us is the way to develop deeper connection. John Gottman, we spoke about a little bit at the beginning of the show, is one of the most influential marriage researchers in history. After studying thousands of couples, he discovered that successful relationships are built on repeated moments of connection. Again, the things we can do to connect. The whole show's wrapping itself in connection. One of his most famous concepts is emotional bids. An emotional bid is any attempt to connect. And you go back to the five love languages: intimacy, time, saying you love them, saying what a great person they are, that these things are attempts to connect. These are ways to show that you love a person, that you want to be connected. Examples: hey, look at this. Listen to this. Can I tell you something? Bring them into your world. Be brought into their world. Healthy couples respond to these bids. When your partner says, hey, listen to this, pay attention. When you say, listen to this, you got to make sure that they're paying attention also. So the emotional focused therapy connection. In this therapy, it's asked, can I reach you emotionally? Attachment theory asks, will you be there for me? I need you to be there for me. Love language asks, how do I best experience love with my partner, with others? Gottman asks, do you respond when I reach for you? Evolutionary psychology asks, am I still part of your tribe? And are you still part of my tribe? And we ask, can we create enough safety that two imperfect people can continue to grow together? For example, a husband can say to a wife, a partner can say to another partner, did you see that sunset? Hey, do you see the sunset now? Do you see the beach? Isn't that beautiful? That may sound trivial, but psychologically it really means I want to share this moment with you. I want a moment of connection. And every time a partner responds to a question like that, the connection grows. I want to thank you for paying attention to 90 Day Soulmate this week, for being part of the show. We talked about Freud. We talked about attachment theory, emotionally focused therapy, Gottman, love languages, evolutionary psychology, neuroplasticity, and the triune brain. All these things focus on connectivity. Focus on this study that we read about, this research. Human beings are wired for connection. When we feel safe, we move towards love. When we feel unsafe, we move towards survival. Survival disconnects us emotionally, as when we are in the emotional survival mode, we can't connect on a clear human heart-to-heart mode. Hope that we all learned something this week. Appreciate you being with us on 90 Day Soulmate. Have a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.